Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And we were talking about companies just starting the hunt for good reliability training and what they need to do or look for to get what they need out of that training.
Well, this came up, Chris, because over the last couple of weeks, I've gotten a couple of requests in, and I've got a call later today, actually, that's I'd like to talk to you about providing reliability training for my group. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that was the total sum of probably all three requests, was phrased pretty much just like that. It was, I need training. Okay. So I'm looking at it going, all right, should I send them a book? You know, or is it, do they want, you know, entertainment? Do they need somebody to tap dance on the stage for 20 minutes? You know, what exactly are you trying to get done here? And so it's, my thought is that instead of asking for training, why don't you ask for what you're trying to accomplish? And training may be the right venue to do that. It may not. You may not have thought it through quite well enough yet. But, you know, what problem or improvement are you trying to do such that training is a way to get there? And I don't know what your take is on this. And I'm going to give you a hard time because you have this academic background on your resume.
Which, and a good chunk of it's largely irrelevant for 90% of applications, but that's the point, you know.
Yeah.
So not all training is going to be the right on the money. I think where you and I share some common ground, though, Fred, is we always believe you need to work out why you're doing something first before you work out how you go about doing it. So you don't just go and do data analysis on numbers in a spreadsheet unless there's a decision to be informed by it or root cause analysis on a product that's not, hasn't got any chance to be improved, for example. So you can't do anything about it. There's no point working out what you could do hypothetically.
Right, right. Oh, I saw a great meme the other day. It was this guy who was like, you know, in first grade, kindergarten, first grade, I learned about numbers and, you know, addition. And then I learned about algebra, you know, and progressed through high school. I learned about algebra. In college, I learned about calculus. And then in grad school, I learned about tensor calculus and all these highfalutin, you know, numerical solutions, all this weird fancy math. And then the curve just takes a complete plunge down to my first job. I opened Excel.
Yeah. We've talked at length about, you know, what traditional training institutions do and don't do well these days with universities. And we might we could lay off them a bit for today. But, I mean, with the math stuff, there is something to be said for example, just being taught a bunch of different mathematical techniques to actually just improve your brain and grow your brain and teach your brain how to learn new concepts and things. And even if you don't use those things later on, your brain is better for it, for those formative years of being taught how to do differential calculus and all sorts of weird and wonderful different things, because that has made your brain stronger in that space.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think it also gives you a way to view problems in different ways. If you didn't know about calculus, then the idea of optimizing a volume for outer, you know, like a surface area to volume type calculations would be unfathomable unless you invented calculus to go do it.
Yes. And a lot of the reliability stuff is based on detailed mathematics, but you don't need to necessarily derive these equations anymore. They're in textbooks. You can pull them out.
Well, that's also part of the problem, though, I think. And you've commented on it at conferences. Mm-hmm. Somebody gets up and talks about the exponential distribution as if it's the only distribution you need to do reliability. And then somebody goes, well, it's in the books, it's in the conference, it's in the papers. That's what I do for reliability. They don't think it through. Is what am I really trying to solve here? What's the underlying assumptions and stuff? I think the training part is not the certificate. One of my thoughts here is that if somebody signs up for a training package or program or whatever, they, if somebody's doing it on their own and they're getting reimbursed by their company, one of the early questions is, do I get a certificate of completion? Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm like, okay, is that what you really want from this training? You know, mm-hmm. Well, then I get paid. Okay, that's fair. And I get reimbursed for it. Well, that's fair. Well, let's talk about it a little bit more. What is it you're really trying to do? You know, as well, I want to learn about the different kinds of distribution so I can do data analysis more effectively or know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing now. I need to know it. Okay, now we can work with that. But I get that request of, I need training. Okay, what is it you're trying to achieve with this training? Yeah. And that always, and it, once in a while I get a client that calls and says, I want to transition my quality team into a reliability DFR consulting agency within the company. Mm-hmm. Okay. How are their skills with reliability statistics? Well, they don't have any. All right. Well, let's start there. You know, how are they at working with other people and influencing them to change? Oh, they're pretty good with that, but the reliability knowledge is lacking, you know, a little bit. So let's work on that.
So, but that's a good point. I mean, that's your client could explain what he or she was trying to achieve, even if you have to flesh out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. There's an idea of the end state, and it comes back to why you're doing it. So, I really advocate for that sort of stuff. And I suppose in a very pure sense, if you have conducted some sort of organizational or completed a plan for your organization to transform your organization from where it is today to where you want it to be in the future, and just say in that analysis for that plan, you deduce that you needed to have a whole test chamber on site, mm-hmm. then the next very obvious conclusion is, if you also conclude that you need to have your own whole technicians, is that we need to train our whole technicians.
Right.
Very clear, logical flow to what training you need. I've also been involved with organizations which know that they need to improve their reliability awareness but don't know where to start. And sometimes a generic reliability course can be the right thing, because then that gives them the language and some of the confidence to ask questions about what the next step might mm-hmm. be. But even then, that's a very clear, why are we doing this? Because we need to start a conversation in our organization. That might sound subjective and weak and high level, but I think it's very powerful, actually.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it, and we need to start talking about it.
That's right. And we need a language, the ability to know what we're talking about. How do we phrase mm-hmm. these things? What metric should we use? What's the reliability model? What's the plan? Those kind of things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an interesting point. I know some of my favorite clients are the ones that have a clear picture. It's like, can you hold our hand for this project and show us what you're doing as a reliability person on the project? And I'm like, okay, sure. And so it was a mix of generic training plus, in this situation, here's how I'm thinking it through. It was basically me thinking out loud a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But on the next project, they said, all right, we're going to put together the plan and start executing it. Yeah, we're going to run into different circumstances. Did we think this through the right way? Can you mm-hmm. look over our shoulder? And then yep. the third project with them was, we think we've got this, but then they asked some really interesting, tough questions. And it was connecting to their business model and connecting very nuanced trade-off mm-hmm. analysis. And it was like, yep, they got it. I'm running just to keep up with them at this point.
Yeah. But every single stage you talked about, I had a clear idea of what they want to do,
yep.
What they're trying to achieve, or a clear idea of what it smells like, which is sometimes all you need. Again, just saying we need to start having conversations in our organization about reliability. That's a quite an admirable and very, dare I say it, clear goal.
It is. And so I've seen this in the literature for, you know, training professional societies, just generic overall, just people that bring training to organizations, whether it's for the HR department or it's for regulatory compliance with required training, or it's specialized training for particular parts of their organization, working with subject matter experts, or, you know, bringing them in and getting their programs going. Is the first step is is training the right path to get you there? And it's like, you know, it isn't always. But it's funny, though. Training takes so many different forms. I worked for one boss that figured that going to a conference once a year was just an extension of vacation time.
Yeah.
He just thought it was, yeah, we got to, like, pretend we're training you and stuff so you can go to a conference. But he drew the line when it was in Hawaii. He says, now that's just obviously just a vacation, so I'm not paying for that. It's like, it's the world's best conference on XYZ thing. Or whatever. Nope, you're not going to that one. You know? But it ranged from the view of training as just a perk, as a nod to, we have to invest in our people. But it wasn't really used or vetted or any expectations you'd come back with anything useful or anything like that. All the way to that it's just a regular ongoing part of your day-to-day work. If you're not learning, you're not contributing, right? You're not working hard enough, kind of thing. And we as engineers often face problems we've never solved before. And I think that's kind of the beauty of reliability engineering. We get people that break things in novel new ways all the time, or could. So we're constantly learning different things all the time. But training can be on the spot, you know, look it up on Google real quick and go, you know, I've never seen this orangish powder on my circuit board before. What could that be? And sort it out from there. Or it could be learning the differential calculus so that we can apply a more sophisticated model into the mechanical engineering team. You know, it just boggles my mind how many options we have. And so looking for training, not only is, well, why are you doing, but what format is the right one for you? So it's kind of a long-winded way to get to, it's not just why you want to do it, it's what format would work for you.
Yeah, and of course you can. There's something to be said for let's call it virtual courses. We're moving towards virtual everything, but virtual / face-to-face conference. Courses or synchronous courses where you have an instructor real time talking to you and you get to talk back. And then obviously there's the online versions or asynchronous courses where you can do it whenever it suits you. And they both have their strengths and they both have their weaknesses. But I think with technology coming along, the sort of the weaknesses associated with all those training techniques, which not that long ago were seen as, you know, not as good, are starting to disappear. I think before COVID-19, everyone knew that face-to-face was the best. It was the best, and just having video conferences or anything like that was a poor cousin to that to those irreplaceable face-to-face meetings. Now, you can't exclusively have virtual meetings all the time or video conferences all the time. It's very important to have that tactile relationship reinforced by actually speaking to someone in person in the same room. But I think people are understanding, hey, it's not quite as bad as we thought. In fact, it allows you to do certain things you couldn't do. We're just speaking to our friend Carl in terms of Familiars, and from what I've learned as well, we're starting to do Familiars virtually, which not that long ago would have been inconceivable. But the benefits of doing Familiars virtually is that you can have access to people that you possibly couldn't possibly have last time. You can have experts from across the world dial in for the 2 hours you need them to talk about solder joint failure mechanisms and then disappear in a very seamless way. And it's, in fact, there's a lot of, it's not that virtual for me as are now the poor cousins, a necessary evil with COVID-19 and all that sort of stuff. They actually have been starting to show they have really useful characteristics that you can't get in a face-to-face venue. I know we're talking about something that's not course training anymore, but you just need to start thinking about, again, the medium of your training, what suits your team the best, and start really perhaps opening your mind in a way that might have been challenging not so long ago.
Well, let's use that in the example of an FMEA training. So if we get a request, hey, my team needs FMEA training. Okay. Mm-hmm. Our first question is why? What are you trying to achieve? Well, I read about it, I've heard about it, and a couple of my team members are from other organizations where it was very useful for them, yet we're not all on board with it. We don't know the basics, we don't know how to use it or facilitate it. So we want to be able to bring the thinking and use of FMEAs into our organization. Okay, now you've got a why, right? And it, mm-hmm. the intent is to prioritize our resources so we solve the right problems and improve our reliability program. Our reliability of our system. Okay, I understand. All right, that's good. Then it's just a basic quick assessment. To me, it's like, where's your team located? You know, well, they're all over the world. All right, let's do this virtually. Even without COVID, I'd say, let's do this virtually. Or let's do it asynchronous. Here's a course on the 10 steps to do an FMEA. Or I'd send them a book. There's a $10 book. The basics of FMEA or something like that. It's a little itty bitty paperback. It has the definitions, the flow chart. Here's the 10 steps. Here's what an occurrence is. Here's what a severity is. And it just gives you the language of FMEAs. You guys all read that. We'll get together for a discussion and anybody have any questions, we'll do a quick demo, right? We'll just run a quick session. So you get the idea of what it is. And you go, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then next step is, let's actually do one. You know, we'll get somebody like Carl, who's this gifted facilitator, to come in and say, hey, let's facilitate one. And you can do it in person, you could do it online, and they see how it's done. Then the next step is, well, how does my team become facilitators at this? Well, one of it is just through practice. And I think it's like a guided where they get feedback. So they go do an FMEA, but somebody that is familiar with facilitating sits in or listens in and then provides feedback at the breaks or at the conclusions. Well, when this occurred, you could have done this, this, and this. Or this was a symptom that you're seeing, that you got into this rat hole. Could you have stopped that? You know, give them constructive feedback as quick as possible so that in their next hour or their next attempt at it, they have points to improve. Coaching them, essentially. Mm-hmm. Right? So sometimes it's learning a process or terminology that actually works rather well asynchronously, or give them a book right here, and there's going to be a test, you know. But when it's facilitating or interacting with other people, or say doing a detailed root cause analysis with a team, and you have all these group dynamics going on, there's no asynchronous learned language. I can learn language all day long about time management at a meeting, but until I actually go do it and know what I'm doing well or not well, I'm not learning anything. And so I think there's different formats that handle different types of content.
Yeah, and it's, again, the answer to which one you need is going to come back to what it is you're trying to achieve, why you're doing it. So which I think was, I suppose, the thing that started this conversation between the two of us, where we're trying to answer that hypothetical question about what you need to do, or what's your first steps as an organization, as a team, or even as an individual when you're trying to work out what reliability training you need.
I think the bottom line here is that if you're out looking to get training for your team or your organization, is instead of saying, hey, I need reliability training, can you do that? You will get a better response that meets your needs if you've thought through already, well, what is it you're trying to achieve? What is this training actually going to change or provide? And make that request. Hey, I need to improve our ability to XYZ in our organization. Well, training is an option, but it might not be your only option. So request what you want, not the method to get there, because there may be other very cost-effective solutions to get you there. Training may not be the right answer. But if you've got a clear case for why training is the right thing, well, make that in the request. Make it clear. That's what you're looking for. Rather than just, hey, I need training. You know, we have an opening on Tuesday from 8 to 10 o'clock. So can you fill that for us? Okay. What do you want me to talk about? Well, whatever you want to talk about. We can learn a lot of things.
Yeah. But you actually trigger a thought, because a lot of organizations just, again, they just want to get reliability more topical. So they sometimes ask, hey, can we just do an hour chat over lunch? You know, mm-hmm. we often have lunches, weekly lunches, where everyone gets around in the same room and we have someone talk about something, and we want you to be one of those people. That's also cool, because you got no very specific outcomes per se, but you just, again, want to get people to think more about a certain topic. And that of itself sounds weak, but it's a really admirable state,
well,
too.
I hadn't thought of that. That's, you know, it kind of reminds me, you remember the old-fashioned bookstores where they had books on the shelves and you could walk around through the anthropology section or the engineering section or the, you know.
That was back in the 1994s.
Dating ourselves a little bit there. But
that was before social media and stuff.
Oh, yeah. But the idea is of the lunch and learns, or the like our webinar series that we do, mm-hmm. it's a way to expose you to things that you didn't know, or to reinforce things that, yeah, that makes sense, or I didn't think of it quite that way, that kind of program, whether done internally or through external means, is like going through the bookstore and picking up a random book and flipping it open and going, oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think that too has value. It's part of professional development. There's no doubt about it.
It's like, you know, it's like why you get magazines and New Scientist and mm-hmm. all sorts of different things. You're not trying to solve a scientific problem when you read the New Scientist, but you're trying to pique an interest, and that's a very, you know, you want to keep that curiosity alive and kicking. It's a very admirable trait.
Yeah. All right. So we kind of hopefully laid out a framework here. That if you're going to ask for training, right, to us or to anybody, is what are you trying to accomplish with the training? What's the purpose of this? What are you trying to change or make a difference in or do or improve? And there's lots of different reasons. There's none of them are wrong per se. It's that help the person that you're asking for the training understand what it is you're trying to achieve, and let their experience help you get the appropriate training package to meet your needs. So anyway, we'll see if we spark any comments or feedback to us and about the best practices for finding training as you go out looking mm-hmm. for it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, if you've got questions or you want to contribute to the conversation, head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and you can find a comment form there. You can join the conversation, or you can contact Chris or I or the other hosts of the show through LinkedIn or on our About pages at Ascendo. And as always, we certainly look forward to hearing from you.
Absolutely.
All right, Chris. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Fred. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.